It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and I'm here every weekend where we're doing life together, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Chris Weigel is off this weekend, and the reason he's off is because we have a special guest, Dr. Fred de Blasio. Welcome, well, Dr. de Blasio.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I'm so glad that you've joined us. Fred is a friend, and he's a fellow academic who has spent years working with couples and families. You do a lot of therapy still, don't you, in addition to teaching?
I do. I'm a full-time professor, but I also do a day a week of therapy clients.
He still has his hands in the everyday problems that people are experiencing. That's one of the reasons I like talking to him and having him on the show. He specializes in work with personality disorders, and that's going to be our topic today. We're specifically going to talk about narcissistic personality disorder, and we'll explain what that means in a moment. Let me give you a little bit about Fred's background. Dr. Fred de Blasio is a licensed clinical social worker, and he's a professor in the School of Social Work at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. He's a noted author, a researcher, and therapist known for his writing and clinical work on not only personality disorders, but also forgiveness. He also is here today to help us understand what narcissism is and how to detect that in our relationships or maybe even in ourselves. You hear this comment all the time. People will say, oh, he's a narcissist. When we hear that, what are people talking about?
First of all, you have to realize we're all narcissists in many ways, because God made us to self-preserve or to self-love. So we take care of ourselves. When you take a look at the beginning of that, then we can go up a scale from mild to severe. And the more severe cases cross over into what we call personality disorders. Many of your listeners today might be dealing with someone who's crossed over, not the normal narcissism that people go through, but that point where it's affecting and hurting the family.
So are you saying because of our sin nature, we all have this tendency to want to be God at times, and we want to promote ourselves and preserve ourselves and to think of ourselves more highly than we should?
Right. That's part of the sin nature. But remember, that's very godly that we take care of ourselves, that we take care of our bodies, that we take care of our spiritual lives. But then you cross over to that sin part you just discussed.
It's the crossing over where that takes a more negative view. You become more self-important than the people around you.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the fruits of the Spirit for the Christian especially are not evident as much as they are when you haven't crossed over that line.
You talked about crossing over. Help us understand what makes someone get that label of personality disorder.
We have symptoms. There's 9 of them, and only 5 are needed to qualify you for a narcissistic personality disorder.
What are people looking at when they think about that?
Well, they have a grandiose sense of themselves. They're preoccupied with their own power and success. They believe themselves to be special and that they can only be understood by high-status people. Now, remember, you only need 5 of these. They require excessive admiration. In fact, that particular one I see a whole bunch of.
Okay.
And later we'll talk about how that can be a key to have success with a narcissist.
Okay.
They have a sense of entitlement, like they deserve more than what the normal person gets. They're interpersonally exploitative, which means they take advantage of interpersonal relationships, especially those within the home. In fact, many times they operate like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Mm. In the home, they often come out as Mr. Hyde, where they're interpersonally exploitative of their wives, their children. They're demanding and critical and controlling in that particular realm. But they may not be out in the environment, which causes a lot of confusion for family members.
Yeah, because they look one way to the public, and then the people that are living with somebody like that sees a whole different side of that
person.
Exactly.
And then they lack empathy, which is another big one we see.
Yeah, that's a big issue, not to have empathy for people.
God created us, I believe, with empathy. We're made in His image. And we're going to talk about why that connection isn't quite working for narcissists in a while. They're often envious and jealous of situations and people. And of course, they're arrogant and they have haughty behaviors. We look for five of those.
Thinking about our culture, so many of those characteristics that you just said are reinforced.
Exactly.
In sports and entertainment, we hear people constantly tooting their own horn and needing to be admired and all of those things that you talk about. This whole idea of narcissism is culturally accepted on some level, isn't it?
If you look at our history as a nation, we become more and more narcissistic as a people.
If you think someone is narcissistic, you don't go up to them and label them. You don't go say to them, hey, you're narcissistic. I don't think that helps people too much.
Exactly. In fact, people get into a lot of trouble because once you call a narcissist, they take that as a criticism.
Yeah.
And a little unknown fact about narcissists, many of them are very insecure. Mm-hmm. Many of them have poor self-identities. You may not know that by the way they come off as a ferocious lion, but oftentimes underneath that, they're little puppy dogs. When you call them a narcissist or when you're sarcastic with them, they take that very deeply and they feel offended and they feel like you're not loyal to them and that you're criticizing them, and they'll resist you on that.
And we'll get into that a little bit more in the second segment in terms of, you know, how to interact with somebody like this. Before we do that, there's been a lot that we're starting to find out about what happens in the brain of somebody who has narcissistic personality disorder. Tell us a little bit about what that research is showing.
It's an incredible question, which will hinge a lot of what we talk about in the next segment. And that is that the neurologists have been studying narcissists for about 20 years. And it's been separate from psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers. They found that their behavior is so odd and strange and hurtful that they now are comparing their brain scans with normal population. And here's one of the big things they found. The biggest one, I think, is that there's the connectivity between structures through the white matter, so neurons, pathways. The signaling force is not as strong going from one structure to the next. So in other words, things leak out. They don't get the full signal.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when it comes to their amygdala, which is the emotional part of us that responds to hurt and to feelings and so forth, and then our prefrontal cortex, what part of the brain that inhibits certain behaviors
impulses
and promotes others.
And, yeah. If it's leaking out and it's not really giving the full connection, translate this a little bit for the audience, what does that do then for the person? If they're experiencing that, how does that look in a behavioral sense?
Well, first of all, understanding that their brain is not normal. The most common thing I get from people is he just doesn't get it. Literally, they're not getting it.
They're not getting it.
They're still responsible for their behaviors.
Yes.
But you have to see them as not having a normal brain. You need to be very careful how much temptation you give them to try to be normal.
Now, I can hear somebody saying, that's just an excuse. But you're saying it's not an excuse. It's our ability to look into the brain now and see that the brain functions differently.
Exactly. To give you a metaphor, if quadriplegic was invited me to their house, then that quadriplegic can't get up and dance with me, open the door, give me a drink. I understand that. And so I come in with certain expectations than I do a person that isn't bound by a physical disability.
The reason this is important for you who are listening is that if you're dealing with someone who's a narcissist, if you begin on the point of maybe their brain is functioning differently than someone else, maybe that helps us get a little bit more understanding, a little bit more empathy in that relationship. It still means we have to deal with that person, so we're going to talk about how to deal with them in a moment. Stay with us more with Dr. Fred de Blasio after the break.
For more information on today's topic, visit drlindamental.com, where you can read her blogs or sign up for her newsletter.
The other day, I was cut off the road by a driver. Everything in me wanted to yell, "Hey, watch out!" But I restrained myself, knowing that yelling at the driver would not do so much good, and it wasn't the best way to deal with my anger. Anger easily rises up in most of us. Anger, while a natural emotion, needs to be dealt with in the right way. The Bible tells us, be angry, but do not sin. So what is the biblical way to handle anger? Well, this is a question I answer in my short and easy book to read, Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness. That small book has sold over 130,000 copies because of how practical and helpful it is to everyday living. So if you want to be angry, but not sin, practice what Scripture teaches. Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness is available on my website, drlindamental.com, and online where books are sold. Well, you're listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, where today I have a very special guest, Dr. Fred de Blasio from the University of Maryland, and he is talking with us about narcissism and what it means to have narcissistic personality disorder. And we want to help you understand what's behind that disorder. I would say this is probably one of the most misunderstood personality disorders. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, often a narcissist is looked at as a mean-spirited person and controlling person.
So let's talk a little bit about the underlying hurt from a family perspective, from a growing up childhood experience. What is sort of the underlying issues with somebody who's becomes narcissistic?
One of the big factors in a narcissist is that they are insecure and their identity is not formed, and respect to them is so important, and loyalty and adoration. And oftentimes they act in ways that people can't reciprocate or don't reciprocate love and respect and adoration. And so their brains go wild in the sense they feel disconnected, they don't feel loved, and they don't operate in the best way that they can.
It's like a wounded animal in some ways.
Exactly.
And then if it's the loyalty, the disrespect, so where is that coming from? Is that a result of childhood experiences? Is this something that you grow into with your family patterns, with attachment issues?
Okay. I believe narcissism is a brain disorder.
So you just think from
and
the get-go?
And I believe from the get-go that children have it. And then by the time they're adults, there's been many neuro pathways formed through the practice of narcissism.
Which is why we don't diagnose it in childhood. You wait until later because you see the patterns.
You see it in children. They'll be selfish. They'll be controlling. They'll want their way. It's their way or the highway, et cetera, et cetera. Not all kids who have that will become narcissists.
Because part of that is normal development at certain
stages
of childhood.
But looking at a continuum, it's not black and white. There's a place where you cross over from what I call normal narcissism into this realm that we're talking about now. If you continue to do that, your brain has all these pathways. In other words, you become an efficient narcissist by the time you're 40 or 50 years old.
If you're a parent and you're looking at this and you're starting to see these signs that you mentioned, an excessive need for admiration, some of the things that you were talking about in the first segment, should you be concerned and start thinking about what's going on with that child, that there might be something different about the way that child is functioning because of brain differences?
There's many things you do with children. Ironically, they're very similar to what you do as an adult.
So tell us a few of those things that would be helpful.
One of those is that you have to set boundaries with children, and you can't always be battling them on everything. Despite their behaviors, you still need to love and nurture them. See, what happens in many families is a child will act out, be selfish. The child is seen as being mean-spirited, and as a result, they lose the nurturance and love of the parents. And they're in this position where here they are, they desperately need love and adoration. They're not getting it because of their behavior. Mm. And one could say, well, that's their fault. Well, yes, but the parent might be participating in it. So a parent has to find ways to take care of the behavior, set boundaries, set consequences, but still be able to love the child, spend time with the child in positive ways, and to help build that child's self-esteem.
Is there a way that you would approach someone with narcissism that would be better than other certain ways? I'm guessing that coming right at them with a very angry tone would not get you good results.
You got to remember, a narcissist, the feeling part of the brain, goes on an overdriven state, and they have parts of the brain that keep that going. And that has to calm down before you get anywhere with a narcissist.
Because they're not thinking.
There's chemicals being shot off called cortisol, which deadens thinking. Cortisol is meant to help keep a human being in survival, which is not allowing them to think very clearly.
What should a person do when somebody's in that state if they're upset with that person who's very narcissistic and they see something? Should they go and confront the person? Should they take a time out? What would you recommend in terms of helping?
You do try to take a time out. A lot of family members can see it in the person's face or their demeanor. And at that point, they need to back away and not pursue. You don't win with a narcissist with fire. Fire doesn't fight fire in this situation.
This is tough. This is why books have been written about this, because you're saying that when they're upset and you get upset equally with them, that there's got to be some kind of way of calming the situation down.
Yeah, and plus the family member needs to disconnect their identities from how the narcissist is portraying them. If you're measuring with a yardstick, well, their yardstick is the size of a 12-inch ruler. So they're measuring you. You're always going to fall short in their eyes, and you have nothing to prove to them. You have to have your own self-identity to get the reflection from, say, friends and other people. But the narcissist will not truly measure you as you are, especially the ones they love the most, because they have these such high expectations of them. And people can't meet those expectations. Plus, the narcissist, believe it or not, has very similar intense high expectations of themselves.
Mm-hmm. How do you see this falling out between couples when one person is a narcissist? What do you see the most?
I think that you're not going to win on every situation. Just like the quadriplegic example, there's certain things that the quadriplegic is
just
not going to do for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's where grace comes in. And then you try very, very hard. This is where the crossover now into the forgiveness. If you develop resentment and bitterness and thoughts of revenge and negative thinking, all those things begin to become part of you. And then you start living that out with the one you love. And the things that's so confusing is that the narcissist can be so loving and kind, sort of like Dr. Jekyll in many ways, with other people, and even with you. Many family members, say a wife of a narcissistic husband, can measure and say, well, you know what, 50, 60% of the time he's very kind and thoughtful, but it's that 40%. And then the person concentrates on that 40% and forgets all about the 60%. And they get very confused because they think, well, he can do it. Why doesn't he do it 100%
of the time? And then that lack of empathy, I think that is the hardest one I hear from people. Does he never understand what my feelings are? And what do you say about the empathy part?
If you look at it like a brain dysfunction, then you stop to expect to get empathy from the person. And the more you pursue it, the more it backs away from you. It's a fruitless activity. Instead, what you need to do is you need to develop your own strong identity. When I talk about boundaries, for example, if a narcissist is beginning to lecture you, and you've asked them not to, for example, you can't control the mouth of the narcissist.
Right.
Even if you have very large duct tape supply to try to put on the mouth,
you
cannot do that. But what you can do is say, you know what, you're being too loud, or you're lecturing me again, and I feel a need to take a time out to pray and walk away from the narcissist.
You're speaking my language. You can only control how you react in those situations. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more about how to be with somebody who's a narcissist. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Mental Health Minute. Here's Dr. Linda.
What do Thomas Jefferson, Agatha Christie, Pope John Paul II, and Princess Diana have in common? Well, these notable individuals and many others, past and present, share the habit of journaling. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda, the relationship doctor, and I've got some tips for you on the value of journaling. Whether you're just writing down a few thoughts or pouring out your heart on paper, journaling has some real benefits, like getting a handle on your emotions or a better understanding of other people or even organizing your priorities. Sometimes reading your older journal notes will help you appreciate the sweet little details of life you enjoyed but maybe have forgotten. One of the best benefits of journaling comes when you look back and you see how the Lord has been there in all your circumstances, directing your steps and taking care of the things that matter to you. If you've not considered journaling before, give it a try and see which of those benefits journaling might bring your way.
To check out Dr. Linda's books on weight control, Lose It for Life, Press Pause Before You Eat, Breaking Free from Compulsive Overeating, and Raising Healthy Kids, go to drlindamental.com.
Well, welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. You're listening today to special guest, Dr. Fred de Blasio. We're talking about narcissism. And most of us have had a moment in our life where we've either met a narcissist, maybe we live with one, maybe we work with one, maybe we are one ourselves and really struggling with that problem. Let's go right to the Bible. I want to read a scripture in 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 7, then I want you to react to this. But understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. And then it says, avoid such people. Can you comment on that in terms of the things we've been talking about with narcissism?
First of all, we're all narcissistic, and as a society, we're becoming more and more narcissistic, and our electronic devices are even increasing that narcissism.
They're really pushing
Yeah. We know that we all have that temptation, so in many ways, our world is headed in that direction. But we're talking about narcissists who are well ahead of the game, and you have to remember that when you were reading that verse, also I've been thinking of Romans 1, especially 28, that when one gives away to sin and they keep sinning, that eventually it says that they get a reprobated mind or a debased mind. So in other words, their brain gets all messed up with evil and that they become very efficient at being evil to a point where God just lets them go. Mm. And so that's a very important factor. Fortunately, the last part of that verse, when it talks about then you avoid them, well, a husband and wife or children can't do that.
Avoid. Yeah, right? You can't avoid your partner.
But you can avoid some situations. You see, that's the big key here we're talking about. Seldom do I see a narcissist who's 100% evil and bad in their family setting.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to be a part of the good parts, enjoy that. But you need to find those boundaries that we talked about to avoid those negative skirmishes, the sarcastic remarks you make, or to be dwelling in your own brain about the negativity of the other person. Because the more and more you brood on that, you become an efficient person who is moody, depressed, victim of the situation.
Say more about the pathways in the brain, because I think that is what's important here. Like if you're on a ski hill, you're skiing down a hill, you're carving a pathway down that hill. And if you go on that same pathway over and over and over, you get really fast on that pathway and it becomes part of who you are.
Very good.
But if you go over to where you haven't skied, on the side of a hill where there's a lot of snow and it's powdery and you go down that the first time, it's slow going and it's hard work and you don't get to the bottom very fast. Is that a good way of thinking about what's happening in the brain of a narcissist, that they've practiced these patterns so many times? They're sliding down that hill really quickly.
Well, first of all, we were creating God's image to form pathways. Mm-hmm. And the pathways we're supposed to form is to go from glory to glory, be more sanctified, become more holy, so to speak. As we get older, we become more holy because the pathways we keep sliding down then make us faster and better. So there's a positive side to that. But with a narcissist, they've slid down those hills so many times that you're right, they slide right into those. And what you have to do as a family member is ask yourself, am I helping the slide?
Am I reinforcing it?
How am I reinforcing it? Mm-hmm. And the reinforcement can be kind of tricky. Sometimes it's always being the victim. Mm. In other words, you might go to your friends and tell them how horrible your husband is, and then you get an identity of being a victim mm-hmm. of a narcissist. All of a sudden, you have now efficient slide hills that you're going down. And so it almost, to a point, starts to take away your power
mm-hmm.
because you then begin to see yourself as a victim.
So give us the hope. How does that begin to change?
This is the encouraging part about my work is when I work with narcissists, I'm seeing them improve. Some narcissists come out of the category altogether.
Wow.
Because I support them, I stroke them. One important factor is to adore them. A lot of times they're not adorable, but that's because we're focusing on their negatives. Mm-hmm. But narcissists are usually extremely intelligent people,
yeah,
for example.
Yeah.
Extremely intelligent. They're articulate. They often are successful in their careers. Now, grant you, some of that success is because they stood on the backs of other people and they've abused situations. But still, I talk about adoring them, and then that way they get distracted from some of the negative behaviors they do.
And then does it begin to change the brain? Does it begin to carve those different pathways where they start to act differently?
Right. I think of Romans 12:2 when it talks about to be transformed. And it's very interesting. The word transform is metamorpho in Greek, which means metamorphosis.
Oh, okay.
Like a butterfly in a cocoon has a metamorpho experience and becomes a flying butterfly out of the cocoon. You go from that caterpillar to the cocoon, that there is that hope that if you keep practicing, but it's going to be by the renewing of the mind.
Yes.
But the person who's perhaps in a family with a narcissist, they have to remember that goes for them as well.
Yeah.
They have to begin to understand that the brain doesn't work right, that they're abnormal. It doesn't excuse them, but at the same time, they can't let themselves take on a particular pattern with the situation.
There's hope, and that's what you're saying. And so if you're thinking, I'm in a difficult relationship, we would both advise, go find a counselor, a professional therapist who can guide you through this process. And the work is hard. I would say, wouldn't you say the work is hard?
Oh.
And you have to stay with it. Because anytime you're changing years and years of behaving one way and trying to behave a different way, it takes a lot of work. Don't give up. There's always hope. We know that there's hope in Christ in everything that we do, that Christ is the ultimate transformer. And as we do renew our mind and we do take everything into the obedience of Christ, that we can become more like him in all things that we do. Well, thank you so much for coming, Fred. We scratched the surface of this topic, but that's all the time we have for today. So many thanks to our producer, Pam Miller, our post-producer, Chris Underation, our social media director, Cody Gokenhauer, our engineer, Linnell Fuller, and of course, thanks to you, Dr. Fred de Blasio, my special guest, for all the wonderful work that you are doing, helping people with narcissism and helping couples and relationships and bringing hope to families and to couples. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
The Dr. Linda Mental Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.